The Blast from Our Past Network.
Can I help you?
Sir, I understand this is a terrible breach in protocol,
yeah,
but...
You shouldn't come to my house.
Please, man. I beg you to hear our plea. We are Thermians from the Klaatu Nebula. Our people are being systematically hunted and slaughtered by Rathaceres, a Fatukre. We are to meet in negotiation, however. Our efforts in this regard have been disastrous. Please, Commander, you are our last hope.
Talking Mac.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talking Back. This is the podcast where we like to chat about past achievements in movies, comics, video games, and more. This week, the alumni cast of a space opera television series have to play their roles as the real thing when an alien race needs their help. That's right. We're talking Galaxy Quest. Dean, what's up? Scuttle your way.
Hey, Tim.
Scuttle your way in here like you're actually an alien with 16 tentacles hiding behind the skin of a human.
Man, aren't all those aliens just great in this movie? My goodness.
Oh, dude, the Thermians?
The Thermians.
They could have their
amazing.
Own
amazing. I love the Thermians. I watched like the first Thermian scene. I just kept rewinding it and playing it again and rewinding it and playing it again. I'm like, this is incredible what's going on right now.
It's
amazing.
It's so good.
It's so good.
The first thing you'll notice about the Thermians is Dwight from The Office is a Thermian.
Yep, for sure.
I really felt like it was Dwight from The Office just acting as a Thermian, like
right.
In the role.
Yeah.
I really bought into definitely. Him as his character just acting in the movie.
Yeah,
and it works
for sure.
Well
for
if
sure.
You picture it that
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
This is such a great movie.
It's excellent. Yeah, this is the first time I've watched this movie. I watched it a lot when I was a teenager. Tim, I believe you probably bought me this for... Christmas or birthday or something when I was 13.
Possibly.
And yeah, and I watched it a ton. I loved it so much. This is the first time I've watched it after watching any Star Trek movie.
Perfect.
Yes. So it's the payoffs are just so great after now I've watched every Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Star Trek fans voted this the 7th best Star Trek film of all time.
It makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Because there's like, what, 13? 13 of them?
I think there's 13. Yeah. What is there? There's 6 and then 4 and then 3. Yeah, there's 13.
That's number 7.
I can think of a handful. It's above.
Heck yeah. Yeah. You know, no, it's fun. There's action. There's lots of laughs. It's such a great story, man. Well-developed characters. Good effects for the time. This is a classic.
It is so perfectly balanced, like the satire and then the also like good sci-fi movie, you know, and it's tough to do that. It's tough when you're doing like the satire type movie to when you want to like make nods to the actual property without making fun of it. You know, it's like it's balancing that line perfectly of the jokes hit hard, but also the sci-fi story is tight and good.
Definitely. Yeah. You said satire. I think it's a parody.
Okay, whatever. I don't know the difference.
I could be wrong, but yeah. Like this is the first big Star Trek parody to happen.
Yeah.
SNL did some skits. In Living Color did some skits. But I do believe this was like the first real attempt to do something with that property. And man, that's a really bold decision, because I feel like if you're going to make a movie like this, a large section of your target audience are probably going to be Star Trek fans. So you don't really want to piss them off. Like if you're going to do it, you better get it right, or there's going to be a lot of backlash and your movie's going to fail.
Yeah. I think that's why it's so perfect, you know, because it doesn't do that. It doesn't like offend anybody who's a big Star Trek fan. It just gives them those like really good moments. Like I think back to like Spaceballs, you know, I think there's a lot of Star Wars fans that despise Spaceballs because it's poking maybe a little bit too much fun at the thing they love.
Right.
But not this movie, you know, this movie is just having fun with the thing that you love.
It really felt like an episode of a Star Trek show. Like it really,
for sure, yeah,
had such a perfect vibe to it. It seemed like the movie team like wanted to make something a Star Trek fan would love. Instead of saying, yeah, let's rip off the Star Trek franchise and try to make a shitload of money. It just didn't feel like the producer slash investor agenda really got in the way of the team on the movie just making this really, really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You can really feel like the love, the Star Trek love, and it doesn't feel like anything got in the way of that.
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver. Oh my goodness, dude. Did she ever steal the show from me in this one? I don't know what your
For
feelings
sure.
are. She was so good. And I'm like you. I saw this a ton when I was younger. I remember seeing this in theater.
Yeah.
I wasn't even really into Star Trek at the time. My Star Trek love came when I was a child. Then there was a large gap. And then I sort of like got back into it when I was, you know, around 25. When I saw this, I was probably like 17 maybe. And just going to the movies with a friend. And man, I loved it. We were both blown away by how fun it was. It was also a time at the theaters where they had just introduced toppings for your popcorn. So do you remember those? They had like shakers of like salt and vinegar or barbecue or ketchup or dill pickle. And you just cover your popcorn in this stuff. I remember we'd cover the top of it. But then by the time you got to the middle, none of it had made its way down. So we'd always steal like an extra Coke lid and just fill the lid up with topping. And then halfway through the popcorn, we could use the stuff on the lid to finish it off. Problem is, you got to be real careful with that lid. That's not a lot of security with that lid. Like that gets bumped and all your toppings are gone.
It's all gone. It's all gone. My trick, Tim, was that I would eat the top of it really, really quickly. So that was like a little bit of a gap. And then I'd sprinkle all the topping in, roll up the top and shake it. And I'd just shake it around.
That's a good plan too.
And get it distributed everywhere.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. When did that stuff start like choking you when you inhale it? I feel like that wasn't the first wave of that powder. I don't feel like it choked you if you just like looked into your popcorn and inhaled it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember being choked by that.
Oh, a switch happened at some point. A switch happened.
I do remember eating a bag of that popcorn with the amount of salt and vinegar topping I would put on it. Like the next day, I would shed the skin on my tongue like a snake would shed its skin.
It's disgusting.
All the skin would die on my tongue.
Yeah, yeah. It's like what sour Skittles do to you. It's disgusting.
Yeah. I never stopped, though. That was never enough to make me not want to go back and do it all over again.
Well, you had new skin on that tongue. You had, like, fresh taste
buds. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was great, actually.
Yeah.
Back to Sigourney Weaver. Watching this movie, it left me, this is very, very funny, but it left me wanting to watch Alien more than it left me wanting to watch Star Trek.
Right. That is funny. I like that. Yeah, like I saw this movie before I had seen Alien for sure. And like now, obviously, I love Sigourney Weaver because Alien's my favorite movie. But this is where, you know, I really loved her in this movie, you know, fell in love with her in this movie. Great. So funny. And so now watching it back with that, too, like watching it back with all this now, all this love for her in Alien, watching it back, seeing her in this role, it was just absolutely great.
Yeah, so like all the characters are good. I think they're all really well worked out. They all kind of have a starting place. And by the end of the movie, there's someone different. They've learned something from the adventure, which is so cool and really hard to do with this many characters because they are working with so many characters that I'm not even going to be calling people by their character names because it's going to get too confusing for everybody. But
yeah,
like, who was your favorite character in this movie?
Okay. Yeah. So Sigourney Weaver's character, I thought, had like the things that she said made me laugh the most. I really liked her character. I thought she was really funny. So we've already said that. So that aside, Malthazar is just the so fucking good. Best. Like, that guy, that's the best thing I've ever seen anybody do on screen.
Yeah, I know,
like,
right?
That guy is incredible. Like I said, I watched that scene that he was introduced like over and over just because the first way he's talking and running his words together and whatever the tone is, like, this is so good. How did he come up with this?
I know, right?
This is fantastic. So every time he's on screen, I'm just like absolutely dying. I love it.
I know. He's so good.
Yeah.
We have come to your planet because we need your help.
Oh, man.
Me and my friends used to joke around with that all the time, but just take that voice and say normal day things to each other with it.
It's a good bit.
It was the best.
Yeah.
So released in 1999 with a budget of $45 million, this movie grosses $90 million, so that's a very respectable doubling of the money. It is directed by Dean Parisot, who hasn't done a lot in film. Now, Harold Ramis was initially attached as director, with names like Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, and Kevin Kline attached for the lead role of Jason Nesmith. But Ramis unfortunately quit when Tim Allen was hired. I'm a fair-weather Tim Allen fan. I'm not really a big fan of his over-the-top acting, but in the right role, I can appreciate what he brings to the screen. And by the end of this movie, I did like him in this role. But after reading that, I can't help but think, what if Steve Martin had been the lead and this was directed by Harold Ramis?
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously that would have been really funny and good. Steve Martin would have been awesome. For me, as like a kid who, you know, a 90s kid, I was, you know, watched a lot of Tim Allen. I had seen Tim Allen in a lot of things. Really loved his comedy. Really loved him in this movie. Like, for me, as just seeing it open, I was like, that is kind of the perfect person for the Shatner role. Like, Tim Allen is going to give you kind of exactly the same vibe as Shatner gives you. And so, yeah, for me, it was great. But I obviously, if you had Ramis and Steve Martin attached to something, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I read that Tim Allen wasn't even going for Shatner. Like, he wasn't trying to. That's not something he was trying to do. And like, I get that's who he would be associated with because he's like the captain of the ship. But at the same time, I didn't really feel like he was trying to copy Shatner. And I didn't really feel like anybody was trying to copy anybody. I think they were trying to copy like a crew of a starship.
Yeah.
So I did appreciate that it wasn't like this person is supposed to be this person. This person is supposed to be this person. It was more like this person is supposed to be the captain. This person's supposed to be the doctor. This person drives the ship. I think that helped for me, just at being a very broad, broad. What am I trying to say here? I like that they didn't get really specific with ripping off a certain Star Trek franchise or series.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's not like doing a Shatner or anything like that. You made it through.
Now we can. I never want to revisit that sentence ever again.
Yeah, he's not doing a Shatner, but I just felt the vibe, I guess, because I only really know Shatner as the, like, coming back and I'm old and I'm doing the movies. Like, that's what I know Shatner as, so I got that feeling right away. I'm just like, oh, this guy's, like, coming back and doing the thing that he used to do 20 years ago.
I see.
So that's where, I think that's where it kind of worked
for
me.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
It was written by David Howard, and this is very, very strange. But he only wrote this movie and one other movie called Trek. which oddly has nothing to do with Star Trek.
That's so strange.
But I don't get it. Like, I thought the story was so fantastic in this movie.
Agreed.
He must have made a decision to, like, expel himself from film. Because there's no reason why this guy couldn't get another writing job.
No. I agree.
Music by David Newman. He's a big name in film scores. He did The Mighty Ducks. He did The Sandlot, Coneheads, Tommy Boy, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, to name a few. But he's got, you know, a couple hundred film credits to his name.
Some of the greatest movies ever there, Tim, you just named.
I knew you'd like a few of those. Right out of the gate, I really love how this movie starts off. And I can remember several movies that I saw in the theater the first time, but Galaxy Quest in particular, there's so many memories of seeing that one. Like, I remember getting the popcorn. I remember going in not knowing what this was about. I remember the opening and how captivated I was. And I remember all the fun I had. I remember leaving and talking to my friend being like, what the fuck did we just watch? That was amazing. And, you know, I remember the drive home with the parents, whatever parent picked us up, one of our dads, and just telling them like, yeah, that was an awesome movie. Because back then we'd go to movies and just for the, to go to the mall, right? To go to the mall, eat a burger, go to a movie. It's like an outing. So we didn't even care what we were watching. Sometimes we didn't even know. And just a great surprise. So I remember how hard this intro hit me. In the movie, we see this like Galaxy Quest show happening. It's a sci-fi Star Trek-esque TV show. And then we see that the cast of that show is appearing at a convention. And the cast are all in the back. They're waiting on Tim Allen to show up. He's like the prima donna of the group. They don't really like him all that much. And it turns out he's sort of like turned into a bit of a laughingstock with fans as well.
Right.
And then four of these Thermians, these aliens from the Klaatu Nebula, come to the autograph signing because they need his help. Tim Allen brushes them off, but they show up at his house the next day with a limo. So he agrees to get in because he thinks they're just taking him to a job. So he goes, and then we watch as the limo takes off and goes into outer space. He's taken to their ship. They think Galaxy Quest is real because the TV signal that they received, they think, is actually historically accurate documentation. And that's sort of how everything gets going. And it's just so much fun. I mean, there's a ton of stuff I left out there, a ton of like intricacies that have you laughing, a ton of intricacies that set up these characters for their journey through the movie. But ultimately, like, that's the story aspect of it. And really fun.
Yeah, I love that it starts at a convention. If you've been to conventions, you know that it wouldn't be weird like that. Just the way this setup is with these aliens asking like Tim Allen to like come to their ship and look at something and him just thinking this is some sort of like job, like they just want to hire him to come to their like set that they've made and they just wanted him to give a couple lines. They'll pay him some money. It really fits for me that he would just think that this is totally fine. I really like that, especially since it seems like they're just doing anything as those characters right now. Like, this is way, way later. It's supposed to be, I think, I don't know if it's supposed to be almost 20
it's
years.
It's 18 years.
18 years. Yeah. Okay. So 18 years since the show, and like, this is where they're getting their money. You know, they're coming to conventions, they're doing commercials, they're doing openings for electronic stores. And so he just came. Why he was late is he just came from someone's basement who had something set up.
Yeah, right.
They had probably like a little room set up that looked like a ship, and he just filmed a couple lines there. Yeah. So he thinks he's just going to another one. Like, okay, yeah, great. I'll come with you. I'll say my lines. No problem. Sounds good. And like, they're just staying in character to him, like to him that they love it so much that they're just going to stay in character.
Yeah. The whole convention thing, too, is interesting because at this time when the movie came out, the convention scene was not like it is now. So you mentioned convention. That just seems normal. There's all sorts of conventions. Every city you're in has conventions now. But back then, those were pretty rare. It was not like a really big thing. That wasn't like a big way for these stars to be making money. Sure, they existed, but the fanfare wasn't anything like it is now. So I think it's really interesting that they kind of like pinpointed this idea of conventions being really, really popular at that time. I think that concept was a little bit ahead of its time, I think.
Cool.
It is cool.
I'm glad
you think so.
I would have wanted to be there.
Dude, I would love just to do like a convention circuit. Like, that's how I earn my money.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, yeah. I'd have to be like famous for something, but that'd be so fun. Just meeting fans, traveling around to different cities, getting COVID in every city you go to, every different
great.
City.
Great, yeah.
Be awesome.
Amazing, yeah. Yeah, it'd be awesome. I heard someone talk on a podcast, and I don't remember who it was, but they were saying, you just got to get yourself into like a small part in two big franchises, right. And then you just do conventions for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you need. You just need to be in two of them, maybe three, and then you just live on conventions.
Yeah, it'd be so much fun, I think.
Yeah.
So I absolutely love that the Thermians have based their entire civilization on the teachings from Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
And ever since they did that, their society has been thriving.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Great teachings.
That's a great Star Trek nod, because in Star Trek, they've done away with money. They've done away with all these things
right.
to improve
yeah, yeah.
society. And all they care about now is exploring, right? So
yeah,
I like that tie-in, one of the small, you know, tie-ins that they have here. But here's the problem. Okay. So obviously there has to be a problem. It's a movie.
Yes.
And it's sort of like Star Trek related. The problem is a group of evil reptilian humanoids named the Fatu Krai show up because they've caught wind of something from Galaxy Quest. It's called the Omega 13 device, and they want to know what the hell it does. And
must be powerful.
Well, yeah, they don't want it might be powerful. They don't want it falling into the wrong hands. They actually want it falling into their hands.
Yeah.
Word has traveled through the universe somehow.
Yeah.
But the Thermians have brought Tim Allen to their ship to help them negotiate.
Yeah.
They're extremely happy that he has agreed to go. They
you got the best player in the game, putting them right in the game.
Yeah, you think those nerds at the convention were fanboys? These Thermians are the biggest of fanboys.
Yeah.
Now, this is such a funny part. Because just thinking about it makes me laugh. Because we've mentioned it, but Tim Allen, he thinks he's just doing like a small bit part here or like a commercial or something. He's hungover. He just wants to get it done with. So he sits in the captain's chair and just starts going through the motions that he'd go through on his show. And he's like, you fire the red laser. You fire the blue laser. You fire this cannon. And then he like gets up and leaves. And these were just supposed to be negotiations. So he's like openly fired on an enemy during negotiations. And then he's like, okay, great, thanks, I gotta go. And the Thermians they're so happy. They're so happy with, they're like, thank you. You have saved us. You've saved our lives. You've saved our society. We owe you so much. And then they send him back to Earth in this like gel pod where it like covers his body, and his body is sent through outer space into a wormhole. He returns on Earth and realizes that that was actually real.
Yeah, it's great. His attitude is great. He looks so rough. Like, he just threw on this shirt. He's wearing sunglasses because he's hungover. You know, he's got the 5 o'clock shadow going on. It looks like he hasn't showered in a little bit. And just fire everything. Okay, I'm out of here. And like, they question at first. Wait, you fired? Are you sure? Like, what if he retaliates? And he's just like, nah, he's gonna be dead. We got him. Hit him with the good stuff.
We got him.
It's so funny. Yeah, and like this guy, like this bad guy, I can't remember his name.
Saris
looks amazing.
Oh yeah, let's talk about them. They look so cool.
He's got like a lobster or a spider on his head. Like, he's got like spider legs coming out of his head, and they move. And I like can't stop looking at them just moving on his head. They look so good. Those costumes are amazing.
He's got like spikes on his back that when he gets angry, they all prop up in like defense.
Yes.
He's got a giant eye patch. My goodness. The costume was, this was dead on for what Star Trek would do. Like, Star Trek loves to put a lot of effort into like alien costumes. They looked so good, dude. So good.
So good.
The only thing was like, they didn't really have down like the movement of the mouth with like the words that were coming out, but it's easy to overlook that. Their ships also were fucking astounding, dude. I really felt like their ship, possibly influence had been taken from that ship for the Romulan ship in Star Trek 2009. Because that Romulan ship looks quite similar. I believe it has that big, like, front opening.
Right, it does, yeah.
It looks like you're going into Birdo's nose or something, like, right up there.
That is what it looks like.
But very similar, and it's green.
Yeah.
Like, I really got a Romulan vibe from this race. Like, this guy was extremely angry, same as Nero was in that movie. Everything's green on their ships, you know, they just want to blow everything up. So I don't know. I wonder if maybe Star Trek took a bit of influence from this movie. I think that would be really cool if they did.
Yeah, I never thought about that. I never connected it to like Star Trek 09. I was just thinking like, oh, birds of prey, how you would get from a bird of prey to this, you know? And I was like, oh, it's cool that it looks different. It's cool that it's not, you know, it's its own design. But I never went even further to think about Star Trek. And I think, yeah, you're right. Like, there's so many similarities between that.
Yeah. But yeah, they were really, really cool characters for sure. Really, like, it really adds to the movie when you have such distinct groups of characters. You know, you've got the humans who are the humans.
Yeah.
You've got the whatever the hell their name was, Saris's group of lizard humanoids.
Yeah.
Like, they look so completely different from everybody else. And then you have the Thermians, who they look humanoid, but in the movie we learn that they're gigantic like octopuses. They're only using these like devices to mask their true form so they won't terrify Tim Allen and his group. And they do so many funny things with that in the movie. Just like accidentally having them not have their like humanoid form on, and they don't realize it. And they're just scaring the shit out of Tim Allen and the people. But yeah, great character designs.
It's so, I love the scene where they haven't put on their cloaking to look like humans, to look humanoid. It's so funny. And like, they're just probably trying to like ask them questions or do something, like, you know, it's on their side when they turn back and when they turn into human, they're like so shocked. They're like, oh shit, sorry about that. Sorry, we forgot to cloak. It's really funny.
Yeah. So when Tim Allen gets back to Earth, he convinces his crew to go back to the ship with him. And the Thermians have already come back to Earth. Another very funny thing. So Tim Allen lands on Earth, goes to his crew. He's been on Earth for about 2 minutes, and the Thermians are already back because they need him to now negotiate terms for their surrender because he's fucked everything up.
Yep.
Oh, man. That's really intelligent. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's great. And at this point, he like realizes it's real, because after he gets sent back through space back to Earth, that's where he's like, oh, this is real.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now he definitely wants to go back with them. He's like, yeah, this would be great. I want to go back on that ship.
Yeah. So they all go back on the ship. The crew, they think it's just a job. So we get to have that fun right. again with these people realizing that this is actually a real thing. They also realize when the gel pods take them up to the ship, you know, if you yeah. travel through a wormhole and you know, the universe, you realize that shit's real. So they all get on the ship and they take their stations on the bridge. And the bridge is based on the fake ship from their show. So they have lots of fun with this. Like, you know, use your station. Do what you do at yeah. your station. It's like, well, I don't know how to use the station. But they built it based upon your actions on the show. So just yeah. do what you were doing on the show. And that will, like, then you'll activate.
It'll work.
It'll work. Everything will work yeah. just fine. Just yeah. act, you know?
Just whatever acting you were doing, whatever motions you did when you were in that role, just do that and it'll work because that's how they designed it.
It's such a stupid idea that would yeah. actually work, but it's such a fun one.
It's so good.
So negotiations, as you can imagine, go terribly. And they're almost destroyed in their ship, but they're able to barely escape. And in a very Star Trek-like thing to do, the crew has to go down to a planet to get a material to fix their ship's engine. So, Dean, what did you think of this part where the crew goes down to this planet?
Yeah, great addition to the movie. This is the part of the movie where now you're actually getting the show. You're actually getting like a Star Trek-type show. You get them going down to the planet. They have to get something. They have to you know, find something for the ship, and they're probably going to deal with, you know, the whatever creatures are on that planet. I was really excited for this part. It's also very funny stuff because you have Sam Rockwell's character, Crewman 6, I think, or whatever, Guy,
yeah, his name's Guy.
Who's just been, he's like, I'm going with you guys. He was in one episode, he got killed before like the first commercial break. And so he just thinks now that they're in the real thing, he's going to get killed soon. So he starts freaking out that they're going down to the planet. There's really funny lines like from Sigourney Weaver, who says, like, we got to get out of here before they kill Guy. It's just so good. It's so good that we're just on watch for just him being in trouble. And you think maybe, you know, maybe he will get killed on this planet because like this movie would do that. That would be funny. So yeah, it's I just have a really fun time when they're on the planet.
Yeah, they meet these like little green characters that
yeah,
Sigourney just like wants to go over and hug them and cuddle them, and they seem so innocent until one of their own comes out limping,
right?
And they're all like drinking water out of a water hole, and this one comes over limping. It's in a lot of pain, and Sigourney Weaver's just like, oh no, look at that little one's hurt. Oh. We need to go help that one. And then as it gets to the water hole, these little green things turn into like little demons. They open their mouth with like giant fangs. And then they kill the injured one. Like all of them just attack and kill him. Very funny.
Very funny.
And yeah. then the crew end up getting off. So many funny things in this movie, dude. I can't even help it. The crew end up getting off the planet in their ship, but Tim Allen is left behind. And there's a creature there that he thinks is there to kill him because all the little things are around chanting its name. And yep. he thinks that's what it is. That's not what it is. There's something else. But there's a really funny, you know, funny part where they try to beam.
Right.
They want yeah. to beam Tim Allen to the ship. And Tony Shalhoub's character is the one who uses the beaming device on the show. So he's the one who has to do this, but very delicate. Like he's like, I don't even know what I'm yeah. doing on this show. Like I'm just moving my hands around a little bit. So they're like, oh, test it out on this creature. That's kind of like harassing him first. Beam the creature here. And then we'll know that it's okay. And we can beam Tim Allen here. They beam the creature on and they beam it inside out. And yeah. it is making the most horrendous noises, and then it blows up. And it was so funny.
So
like
funny.
Tim Allen, he's on the planet. He's like, what are the noises that I'm hearing right now? He's like, did it work? What are those strange noises? Anyways, this all leads to those little green characters, what they're actually chanting is a different creature. Dean, what did this creature that comes out remind you of?
Well, what it reminded me of is Zelda, the taluses in Zelda.
Stone talus, exactly.
Yeah.
Zelda, they must have ripped this off.
It's the exact same thing. Like, rocks, like, come together and make this big, like, rock monster. This part was so funny when you figure out that they've been chanting rock the whole time. Because he just, like, there's this little pig creature that he's just trying to stay away from. And it's, like, smaller than him. And that's what he's like, oh, they're all chanting for this creature to, like, kill me, I guess. And then that creature gets beamed away. They're like, wait a second. They're still chanting. Maybe turn the translator on and they're just all saying rock, rock, rock. It's so funny. Giant rock monster starts chasing him. Yeah, this is like this whole section is just kind of like nonstop laughs.
They get the material to fix the ship, but unfortunately, Saris shows up and takes control of their ship, and he's torturing Mathazar, one of the most lovable characters in the movie. This is a part of the movie that I always felt didn't fit, and watching it again, I still feel like this doesn't fit.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's because they play the Thermians up in the movie like they're at the emotional level of a child. So it felt really weird to see one of them being tortured. I didn't like it all that much. So if I could change something in the movie, I don't think this has to happen the way that they do it.
Especially after Saris like kind of finds out everything here and he finds out that they're not really a threat. He still goes forward with it, you know? He still, like, wants to kill them and torture them. And, like, especially after that, after they're not a threat anymore, why wouldn't he just get the hell out of there?
Well, I mean, he like, essentially does that, you know?
But he wants to kill them all first.
He does want
to
kill them all.
That does feel a little... I mean, yeah, he's evil, but...
I get that, but let's do all that without torturing someone first.
The torture,
you know? Like,
yeah.
You could easily do this with him... You know, so what happens is he's grilling them about the Omega 13 device, right? And he gets like right in Tim Allen's face, and Tim Allen backs down and comes clean about them all just being actors on the show. I think that's enough for me in this movie. Just him getting in Tim Allen's face enough that they have
to
admit it. I don't think you need to show this guy getting tortured. I've never felt comfortable about that scene.
Yeah, the pain of him like realizing that Tim Allen isn't really the captain and this isn't really the crew and they're actors and they've been lying the whole time about being the crew. That's enough pain. Like that overshadows the torture.
It did.
Like it's more hurtful than the torture. So yeah, it doesn't really need to be there at all.
Yeah. I didn't like that, but yeah, Saris is pissed off when he learns that the Omega 13 is nothing because they're just actors. So he locks the Thermians in a room. He's going to suffocate all of them. And he takes Tim Allen and the crew to be blown out of an airlock.
Yeah. And can I just say that sure. I love the idea of the Omega 13 not knowing what it does because like their show is over. So like, yeah, in the show, in these types of shows, you find something on a planet and you bring it back and maybe you don't figure out in that episode what it does. Maybe you figure out like five episodes down the line or a season down the line what that thing was that you picked up on that planet. And so like they never got to that episode, so they don't know what it does. I think that's a really nice addition.
Yeah, they handled the Omega 13 really well in this movie.
Yeah.
There's some stuff to come with it, which is so brilliantly written that I just, I love it. But we get some more like Star Trek-esque fun here where the crew are able to escape from Saris's team and then they split up into groups and are running around the ship and each group has their own mission that they need to accomplish. So it's that fun adventure part where we got to take the ship back, you know? I guess the thing that's really charming about watching all of this is when you're watching Star Trek, you're watching these trained Starfleet like crew members. Like it's really hard to become part of that team. You know, that's the best of the best. What we're watching are some actors who are over the hill and are barely good at doing their acting job anymore, but they're the ones that are being thrust into this role of needing to be these like really high end heroes and like fighters, yeah, if you will. So it was fun. This is some of the character development that I really liked, is they really developed these characters along the way from just being those actors to actually believing that they are these like Star Trek kind of superheroes. Like they yeah, along the way, they sort of slowly start to buy into the fact that, hey, if this ship is real and all this other stuff out here in outer space is real, then why can't we be real? Why yeah, can't we almost like act our way through this? And in the process of acting their way through it, they start to buy into the fact that they actually are those other characters. And I thought the movie handled it really well. And everything sort of gets paid off sort of perfectly with the characters because of that.
Well, especially at the beginning when we open up and they're all like frustrated that they have to go out on stage again. Like, they're at a point where they despise the characters that they used to play, and now they have to be the characters they used to play in order to save everyone. They need to do that. That's all they need to do, because the ship is exactly designed as what they would know, and it's designed to their movements. So really, if they are the ones who can do it. They're the ones who can accomplish it. So you see everyone kind of falling into their role of what they were on the show and becoming those heroes that they pretended to be on the show. You know, like Tim Allen is becoming the commander. He's giving the orders. He's coming up with plans of what to do. I love Sigourney Weaver. Like, damn it, I have one job on this ship and I'm going to do it. It might be stupid, but I'm going to do it. And that's to just repeat what the computer says. And it's great. Like they just embrace it, and it helps them. Like you get this part where they need to do that. They need to use their skills that they have as being those characters in order to get through this.
Yeah. It all starts off as a big joke, and then it slowly gets more and more real to the point where they are so invested in it that nothing else matters. And I feel like we get to the point where I feel like any of them at the end would sacrifice their life for the rest of the crew. Which you absolutely would not get at the beginning of this movie, but is probably the purest like Star Trek idea out there, that any of the crew would sacrifice himself for the rest of the crew. And I feel like the movie took us there, which is really hard to do in an hour and 40 minutes with so many different characters.
Yeah.
Great moment where Tony Shalhoub, he's like, he's kind of got the beaming up figured out now. And there's a lot of shit going down on the ship. They need to get to an armory, but all of Saris's men are like huddled in there. So he beams up the stone talus into the armory.
Nice.
Oh my goodness. It was so much fun watching this thing run around the ship, like expanding walls because it's way bigger than the hallways. But it only happens for like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you sort of like vaguely see it blown out the side of the ship. We don't even really see what happened, but they kind of just like, I guess the movie's just like, well, we need to get him off the ship. So just blow him out.
I think it like tackled guys through the side of the ship. Like, because it was running at guys and they were kind of at the side of the ship. I think it just tackled them right through.
Like the Hulk would do.
Well, I was just going to say, I just watched like the Avengers, the like original one. And this is exactly what the Hulk's doing, is just like jumping around, ripping guys out, like running through walls. That's exactly what he's doing. It reminded me so much of it.
So Tim Allen radios down to Earth to get help from this kid named Brandon. And we had met Brandon earlier in the movie. This is another really, really fun idea for me here. Brandon and his friends are uber fans of the show. They have schematics of the ship. They know what the Omega 13 device does, and they get a chance to help out. So Brandon says, many think the Omega 13 is a matter collapser capable of ending the universe in 13 seconds, but he's convinced, him and his friends, they're convinced it's a matter rearranger that will allow you to travel 13 seconds into the past. So go ahead. You wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I just love the idea that the fan theory is like the one that might be true, you know, because they haven't said what the Omega 13 is on the show. So you have like these super fans speculating what it could possibly do. They're taking the info of what everyone else says. Oh, everyone thinks that it might be this, you know, matter destroyer that, you know, will just be this huge bomb. But actually, they get so into it that, oh, actually, we think it could be this, and it could be used this way. And you just get this fan theory thrown in here, which turns out to be, you know, true.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to say. That's why I think the Omega 13 was handled so well, because they put the knowledge of what it is into the hands of the fans, the uber nerds. They're the ones who know what it is, and they're able to help out by explaining that to Tim Allen. I just thought it's so smart. I loved it.
It's so good, yeah.
The crew have taken back the ship, and they pull off a trick where they get close enough to a minefield to attract a bunch of mines. They lead them towards Saris's ship, and they blow it up. And the Thermians want Tim Allen to go with them and be their commander. But Tim Allen thinks Mathazar should be the commander. I think that's possibly a terrible mistake, but it's fine.
It's a very heartfelt moment, though. It is. And also, Tim Allen wants to go home, bro.
Yeah. He would have said, like, if there was an apple in front of him,
yeah,
he would have said that apple would make a great commander.
Great commander. You've got a great commander in this apple.
So they take the ship back through the black hole to drop, you know, the crew off. We think it's over, but Saris was able to beam over to the ship. He's disguised as Tony Shalhoub and starts shooting up the crew. Everyone's getting shot. Everyone's getting killed. Tim Allen makes the call to activate Omega 13. It does what the nerd said. It rewinds time 13 seconds, where Tim Allen, with the help of Mathazar, are able to take down Saris before he shoots. We head back to Earth, where the news, another really subtle, funny thing, Brandon, I think Brandon's parents are watching the news, and the news is reporting that the Galaxy Quest cast are no-shows on day 3 of the convention.
Right, yeah.
And they're just getting, like, ripped by the media.
Yeah.
But they show up by smashing through the wall of the convention in the actual ship from the show. They come out one by one, blowing the minds of hundreds of nerds.
Yeah.
The guy introducing them, I can't remember his name. It's one of the guys from Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
As they start coming out, he just starts saying their names. And like, after a couple of them, he kind of, like, is taken aback and he says, "What effects?" He's, like, so blown away by the special effects.
Right, like, yeah.
This
amazing.
Is so great. But wait. Saris is still not dead. He comes out of the ship, too. So Tim Allen can vaporize him in front of all the nerds who are now raging in joy. It's such a great moment.
I would be raging.
This is the ultimate thing to happen at a Star Trek convention, to have some sort of, like, scene staged where, like, a ship breaks through a wall and the cast get off and then have to kill some sort of monster. It's incredible.
Yeah, this is basically the way the premium theme park rides are going these days, of, like, it's no longer just you get on a roller coaster and you go around. You get into some sort of vehicle and go into the movie, and the movie's happening around you. Like, that's now what the best rides out there are. And that's what this reminded me of. Like, oh, it just, like, crashes in the side. They all come out of the ship, but then the bad guy's there and you vaporize, like, he vaporizes in front of them, and it's, they great. Would just be like, what the hell is going on? These effects are incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So good.
And it all ends as we see that the Galaxy Quest show has been picked up.
Of course.
After 18 years. And the end.
They just had to have to come smashing through that wall. They just needed that entrance. And then it's like, you know what? You got to go back to the show. Sign the show up.
Hell yeah.
Green light a new season.
Yeah. So a couple things I missed saying. There's a part where their ship is going to be self-destructed. Saris puts it on a self-destruct. and they think they're going to die. It goes all the way down to one, but then stops. Because on the show, it always goes down to one and then stops. They stop it at one. So that's how the Thermians built it, just to stop at one.
Yeah.
Very good.
They're like, this countdown clock can only stop at one. Like, that's the only time. That's the only place it's ever stopped at. So, yeah, they hit that button with like 30 seconds left or something, but it's still going. And then they embrace because they think they're going to die.
Yeah.
It's such a funny realization, too, that Sigourney Weaver has, just being like, it started at one because that's what it does on the show. And then they just run away.
It's great. It's funny. And the other thing is there's comic book follow-ups to this movie from IDW Comics. There's a trade called Galaxy Quest Global Warning, and then another one called The Journey Continues. And I know nothing of those other than that, but I would be very excited to read those. I think they'd be, if they're anything like the movie, they'll be a shitload of fun.
Yeah, and IDW can be really, really good. It can also be like maybe a miss, but IDW can be very, very good. So I'd be interested to, see the names on that at least, and then, you know, read some more. That'd be interesting. I was going to say, I think it's PG. I think it might have originally been like a PG-13 cut or something that they moved down to PG, because I saw at least twice someone mouth fuck. And they just voiceovered screw.
Okay, I think I noticed that too. I noticed one time. Yeah.
So Sigourney Weaver says it, I think, when they're in the tunnel with the smashing hammer type things. She says, we're screwed, but she mouths, we're fucked.
Yeah.
And then Sam Rockwell did it in another moment. He was just kind of in the background, and he just kind of said fuck when something happened. It might have been the Inside Out pig thing. He might have said fuck there. But those two things, and then I also think what I read was that Tony Shalhoub's character was supposed to be high all the time.
Okay.
Which like kind of makes a little more sense with how he's acting in the movie.
Yes.
And so maybe they just took that out just to make it like, just to ensure that it would be PG and not PG-13. But yeah, just interesting.
That is quite interesting, actually. I mean, that would explain the whole Mathisar torturing. Like that feels like it belongs more in a PG-13 than a PG.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Right on. All right. Well, hey, thank you, everybody, for listening. If you'd like to support us, please do so in whatever manner you deem accessible for yourself to do. We would recommend checking out Patreon for a couple bucks every month. You can get bonus episodes. And hey, check us out on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel called Demo Dash, where we play free video game demos and try to figure them out for the first time and beat them in 20 minutes or less. And now that this episode's over, don't worry, because you can head over to bfopnetwork.com and check out some of the other amazing nostalgia-based podcasts in our network. Several of them are better than our show. You'll go over there and never come back. But we recommend you do it, because we want you to have the best listening experience that you can have.
Of course.
And for those still listening, including Adam, who let us know that he listens all this way, hope the studies are going well, Adam. Adam is part of the network. He's on Throwback Trivia Takedown and Blast from Our Past, which has taken a hiatus. But I know what we're doing next week, because next week is the first Monday of the month. So I know all the first Mondays of the month. So I know and can spoil what we're doing next week. This is the spoiler for the people still listening. Next week, for time travel, we're covering The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which is an animated feature. I do believe the only animated feature on our list. I've never seen it. Dean, have you seen it?
Yeah, many times. I own it. I'm looking at it right now.
Cool. I'm very much looking forward to watching it. That's what's coming up. Check it out. Dean, thank you for joining.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, everybody. I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a
a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.